Will the Fed news help or hurt you?
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The Fed surprised markets this week by keeping its stimulus program going. The taper didn't happen, and whether that is good or bad for you depends on what your plans are. To sort that out, Gus Fauché joins us. He is senior economist at PNC Financial Services Group. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning.
So let's talk about some of the potential winners and losers here. Let's say you want to buy a home or a car soon. What's the impact of the Fed's moves on this?
Well, the Fed move has pushed down interest rates, so that makes it less expensive to borrow to buy a new car or to buy a home. So people who are looking to borrow will benefit from lower interest rates, and that's what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to make it less expensive for consumers.
Okay, lower rates there. Now, let's say you play it safe and your money is in a savings, checking, or a money market account. What kind of return are you going to see there?
Very, very low. Short-term rates have been near zero for a few years now. The Fed has indicated that they're not likely to rise anytime soon. So if you're a saver, you know, you're being hit hard by very, very low interest rates. That's one of the costs of the program. The Fed has recognized that, but they've decided that the benefits of lower rates outweigh those costs.
Okay, now let's say you've got a 401k, you're not retiring anytime soon, and there are a lot of stocks in that portfolio. How are they going to do based on what the Fed did?
Well, stocks went up sharply after the Fed announced its decision. One thing is, with rates very low, that's pushing investors looking for higher returns into stocks, and that's juicing up the stock market. And then also, industries that are sensitive to interest rates, like home builders or the auto manufacturers, they've done well with lower rates, and so those stocks have moved up in price. And if you have stocks in your portfolio, you've done pretty well over the past few years.
Gus Fauché, senior economist at PNC Financial Services Group. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Earlier this week, Priceline became the first S&P 500 company to trade above $1,000 a share. So far, there's no sign the online travel site will split its stock to make it more affordable. Shannon Mullen reports on why many other companies with pricey shares aren't that into the idea either.
Think back to before the recession. In 2007, there were 41 stock splits on the S&P. So far this year, there have been 10.
So clearly, it has become less popular.
Thomas Chimanor teaches finance at Boston College.
From the fundamentals point of view, operating performance, earnings, and so on, there is really no effect of stock splits.
That's because the total value of the stock stays the same. Split shares are more affordable for the average Joe, but what if fewer Joes are buying? Richard Peterson is a director with S&P Capital IQ.
More and more retail investors are gravitating towards mutual funds or exchange-traded funds as their vehicle choice for exposure to equities rather than buying individual shares.
Plus, a record number of shares on the S&P are trading above $100, including MasterCard, which has never split its stock, and Apple, whose last split was before the recession. I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Aaron Alexis, the man authorities say killed 12 in the Washington Navy Yard shootings before dying in a gunfight, was vetted by USIS. That is the same security company that did the background check of NSA leaker Edward Snowden. Checks like these are common, but not enough to prevent violence at work. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
When mass shootings happen in the workplace, whether it's a government or private employer, the question of liability is always raised.
Well, one of the key issues of liability has to do with what did you know, when did you know it, and what did you do about it?
Dr. Larry Barton is an instructor of threat assessment at the FBI. In the case of the Navy Yard shooting, the government knew that Alexis had an arrest record, a history of mental illness, and his coworkers reportedly said he held grudges over the smallest issues.
There must be an employee as well as supervisory and management awareness as to what warning signs are indicators of violence or violent activity.
Dan Murphy is the founder of the company Violence Prevention Strategies. He says employers have to go beyond just background checks and training. They need to get help for those employees who show signs of mental instability.
the vast majority of people who are involved in these cases are basically good people who have had life issues, who have had professional issues, personal issues, and they're on a downward spiral in their life.
Murphy says that if warning signs lead to intervention, many of these shootings can be prevented. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
And finally, the new iPhones are on sale today, and one of the most talked about iPhone 5S features is the fingerprint scanner. It can unlock the phone by touch. But after all the NSA revelations, that freaks a lot of people out, wondering if government spies will have backdoor access to their prints. Brainiac National Security reporter Mark Ambinder turned to a noted iPhone expert, Siri. Here's what happens when you ask the digital assistant if it's sending your data to the NSA.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I can't answer that.
That is not comforting, Siri. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.